From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for August 12th, 2022. Ready or not, it's football season. The Green Bay Packers kick off the preseason tonight in San Francisco with the 49ers, and the Brewers visit the Cardinals in St. Louis this weekend. And a little closer to home, Wisconsin State Fair wraps up this weekend. Let's start with Catholic exorcists in Italy. They're feeling overwhelmed by the growing number of possessed people in the country. They're doing 30 to 50 exorcisms a day. Their heads must be spinning. Okay, let's spend the rest of our time together in Florida. This next story is what keeps me awake at night. At Disney World, guests were stuck on a broken down ride for over an hour, and it gets worse. While repairmen worked on the problem, everyone had to listen on an endless loop to "It's a Small World After All." Oh, shoot me now. A Florida man tried to rob a Waffle House using finger guns. Hysterically, that's not the first Floridian to try this. When our robber wasn't taken seriously by the cashier, he left in a huff. So on his way out, not for it to be a complete bust, he stole a bundle of napkins. That'll teach him with a laugh. And a different Florida man, who's also not a brain surgeon, stole $33,000 worth of rare coins. To lighten his load, he cashed them in at a coin machine. The problem is these machines don't know the difference between rare collectibles and a Chuck E. Cheese token. So $33,000 in rare coins went in, and $29 in paper currency came out. Maybe Finger Man and Coin Man can take the $29 and buy breakfast at the Waffle House. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang. And wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. I have to say, at least for those folks stuck on It's a Small World, they were cool in what was likely a pretty hot summer day in Florida. It's the only reason you go on that ride. So a pretty cool week overall for markets, cool in the good sense. Running now four straight weeks of positive returns for the S&P 500, up 3.3% this week, closing at 4,280. The NASDAQ up 3.1%, closing today at 13,047. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 2.9% this week, closing at 33,761. For the year, that NASDAQ, despite what's been a pretty strong run for NASDAQ stocks, down 16.2% still. On the other hand, the S&P down just 9.4% now, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down only 6% after what had been, I think, a very difficult first half of the year, starting to see some light potentially on the second half here, although I think a ways to go. As we look at the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury, largely unchanged for the week, ended last week at 2.84, closing today at 2.85. We've remained decidedly below that 3% mark on the 10-year Treasury, and so maybe a good place to start the conversation this week, Steve. You know, looking at kind of this constant conversation between what the opportunity sets are in stocks versus what the opportunity sets are in bonds. Certainly stocks started to look pretty cheap, you know, earlier in the year with a little bit of a rally. Now things looking a little more expensive, but the comparison between, you know, what we can get buying safer money and what we can get buying a little bit riskier stuff with stocks is getting a little bit more favorable for bonds now. You go back to, you know, maybe the last 10 years, you didn't expect much from fixed income because rates were so low. Well, rates have moved a little higher, and now all of a sudden I think bonds have a more compelling case for their inclusion in, you know, a typical asset allocation model.
Yeah, you know, Kyle, it's always nice to have a lot of options for your money, and bond yields across the board have gone up in the wake of the Fed raising rates. You've got money market yields now right around 2%. It makes bonds competitive, and with the recent uptick and rally that we've seen in stocks, now might be a good time to revisit some of your interest-bearing funds on the bond side of the portfolio and make sure that you are in the right places.
And Paige, I think we got to stress that the bond market's as diverse or potentially more diverse than the stock market is. And so, you know, it's one thing to say we can put more money in bonds now than maybe we would have thought about 5 or 10 years ago. But the where is always the problem. And so, you know, obviously stress, I think that, you know, maybe we need to be a little bit more diverse in the way we think about things.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always funny because on the face value, most people tend to think that the stock market is the bigger market than the bond market. But the reality is the bond market is larger than the stock market. And so just by definition, by size, there's going to be more opportunity out there. And like you said, there's different ways to diversify, not just the type of holdings that you have, but also the risk of those holdings as well. So you don't necessarily need to take on corporate risk. You can look at mortgages, which obviously has a different type of risk associated with it. But when we're talking about diversification, it's always important not just to look at the type of asset, but the risk profile as well. And so I think to your point, in the bond market, you can have some investment grade short-term bonds that are going to be a little bit less volatile than the overall market. Longer dated bonds are going to be a little bit more volatile, at least right now, in a rising interest rate environment. But they're going to be less correlated to stocks. And so when we're looking at trying to find some of those opportunities out there, you know, really, you know, it's not, like I said, not just looking at, you know, whether it's short term, long term, mid term, but also looking at, you know, maybe throwing some strategic income in there, throwing some money market funds are now even paying a higher rate than we've seen before. So I think that we're finally starting to see some opportunity in the bond market that will hopefully, you know, come to fruition in the next few years.
So both Steve and Paige mentioned money market mutual funds. So I have a question, just generally, I'd like to hear more about that. But first, I'd like to back up a little. How come, so like in the financial press, just generally, I see a lot more about stocks. And we don't read them as much about bonds. We don't hear about bonds. It's not a sexy part of investing.
Well, I think it's critical to point out that the vast majority of investors, when they think about investing, the part they want to talk about is return. And what has the best return potential? It's stocks. Add in that, you know, I think stocks are much more tied to the long-term prospects for the economy. It's much more tied into kind of what we think is going to happen in the world. And so it's, in many ways, easier to write about. It's a more compelling thing to read as well. And I think that's where, you know, investors can really differentiate what they're doing versus maybe what they're reading about, in focusing on risk first, right? And focusing on this understanding that there should be pieces of what we invest in that provide some safety, that provide some more tried and true, right? Some more consistent sources of return. You know, I think we've stressed that bonds for a long time had been maybe not as compelling there. Far more compelling now. You add in, you know, Paige said, the money markets. You add in what you could get potentially in CDs or just buying a treasury bond, right? Things we haven't looked at for a long time because yields were so low. Well, all of a sudden, investors have more options there, and so it's more important that they think about those options. If anything, to answer your question, you know, I think a little more directly, it's maybe short-sighted by some of the financial press to not spend more time on some of those discussions because, yeah, maybe 2% on a money market isn't keeping up with inflation right now, but it's better than the zero that you're getting in your savings account, or maybe now just slightly better than zero. So, you know, stressing for investors that if they are sitting on a pile of cash that they don't think they're going to need today, but that they want to keep safe, there's better options now than there have been in a long time. You know, I think as we think about the bond market, you know, it is the piece that provides some of that potential safety. The challenge, of course, that we face is, you know, in looking at what the alternatives are. And so, you know, just circle back for a second, talk about how strong of a run it has been, really the last 4 weeks, but even looking back into mid-June at this point. The NASDAQ now has entered a bull market as of yesterday, which is, you know, I think an interesting thing to say. You know, Paige, you're chuckling a little bit right now as I say that. I'm sure you've got some thoughts on that. But, you know, want to stress that just at the outset, we've had some very strong returns recently in stocks.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously even this last week has been, you know, a good week for stocks. But, you know, looking just specifically at the month of July, in the month of July, the average fund rose about 8.9%. whereas the average fund is still down 14.4% year to date. So I think it's easy for us to get caught up in these, you know, bull market, bear market labels that we're going to put on different markets. But, you know, again, when looking at the NASDAQ, now technically in a bull market territory, but still down 16.2% year to date. So, you know, looking in, but really not to ignore that it was a good rally. It was the best rally we've seen in the NASDAQ since April of 2020, which, as I'm sure you all remember, was the COVID meltdown. And so coming out of that, you know, it was the shortest bear market in history, the fastest return to bull market in history. And that's the last time we saw this type of move in at least the NASDAQ. But I think it's important to note that, you know, some of this has to be taken with a grain of salt. We seem to be back in a bit of a bad news is good news mentality. So when you're looking at, you know, economic data, we have plenty of good news, but there are some things that are still of concerns to investors and economists. And, you know, if the theory is if the economy is slowing, then inflation may not be as much of a concern and the Fed may slow down their rate hikes. I think that's a little bit short-sighted at this point because, you know, as you and I talked about earlier today, we're not going to be able to get inflation down unless the overnight rate is exceeding what that inflation number is. And it's going to take a while to get there. Hopefully inflation comes down rather than the Fed having to continue to raise rates. But I do think that while the rally is nice and I'm happy to see it, and it definitely calms some concerns that investors have right now, you got to continue to look at the bigger picture and not get too wrapped up in those labels.
Which is a great reminder, Paige, as to why we have bonds in our portfolio in the first place. As much as everybody seems to focus on those stocks, they are more volatile, and it's the bonds that provide that risk reduction overall to help you achieve your goals.
Well, and I think we should be clear that this rally has happened with no clear resolution on any of the issues that still are outstanding. The same issues we were talking about back in March or April are the issues we're talking about now, whether that's, you know, continued issues with COVID, whether that's the potential for a recession, the Fed, inflation, all those things, you know, they just aren't resolved overnight. And so a clear reminder that, you know, Steve, you're right, if we can maintain some semblance of balance, we can participate in these kinds of rallies, because these kinds of rallies tend to happen long before we feel better about what's going on in the world.
And keep in mind, the only people that participated in this recent uptick in the last 6 weeks are those that didn't panic and sell when the market was flirting with those lows back in June.
Yeah, and so if this is, you know, some formation of a bottom for stocks, you know, you got to be in now to participate in whatever that recovery looks like. And yeah, you run the risk that we take another tumble from here, and I think, you know, it's a possibility, if not a probability, that we do. But, you know, certainly, again, as Steve, you rightfully point out, I think, you know, it's that balance that lets you stick through it so that you can participate in the good.
You know, I've been reminding my clients of the importance of balance a lot as of late, and why it's really critical not to focus on the total value of your portfolio. If we're drawing income in retirement, if we're trying to supplement other sources of cash flow, we really are only focusing on the income side. What can we distribute from the portfolio? It's not any different, Kyle, than the farmer who only cares about the yield on his crop. And if he wakes up one day and discovers that the value of his farm went from $1 million to $800,000, he doesn't all of a sudden throw up his hands and say, "That's it, I'm out of here." All he cares about is his yield. He knows that over time the value of his farm is going to come back, so long as he focuses on his yield and what he can generate in terms of income, he's going to be fine.
And a good analogy for this time of year, we've got a lot of corn ready to be harvested, lots of summer picnics still underway, maybe a couple of reminders on some economic data this week, Joel. Despite the fact that we seem to be kind of in the middle of a summer lull for a lot of data, still getting the week-to-week economic numbers, in particular some data on inflation this week.
Yeah, I don't know corn prices exactly, but food prices are still up and people are still experiencing that. And inflation is still, you know, top of mind for most consumers, and consumers are the spenders who drive our economy. But we had two reports this week. The biggest the broadest look at inflation is the Consumer Price Index. And then the other one was the Producer Price Index, which looks at prices more on a wholesale level. But both of those had news within them that suggests that you know, maybe inflation is starting to come down. So we had the consumer price index. One of the numbers I looked at in there was if we look at how much prices went up from a year ago, they were up 8.5% versus, in July of 2021. And that's a lot. It's, you know, near a 40-year high, but that's down from where it was in June. Then it was 9.1%. So that's taking a dip. We also, if you look at the core, where you take out the food and energy costs, which are very volatile month to month, the core CPI was 5.9% in July from the year before, and that's down for the fourth month in a row. So there were some good signs there. And one of the reasons that you take food and energy out of the equation is gasoline was the big deal. And people who are paying attention to their pocketbooks, they realize that gas prices have gone down. Well, we've had 58, 59 days in a row where the average price of gasoline nationwide has gone down, and that's showing in these reports. In the producer price index, the 17% decline in gas prices in July accounted for 80% of the decrease in the price index from July to June.
And Joel, just to put another dollar figure on that, I read a report out of Gas Buddy that pointed out that Americans will now spend, you know, as of the month of July, they will spend $400 million less on gas than they would have done in mid-June. And that's a big number. So that's a lot more money in people's pocketbooks that they can go and spend on other things. And so while we are seeing those oil prices come down, to your point, food prices, shelter prices still have been going up in some capacity. But again, everything's about a trade-off, and I think most people would rather spend that money on food and housing than they would on filling up their tank.
And again, Paige, just for perspective, I mean, the price of gas is still higher than it was a year ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it depends upon which distance you're measuring here. But it feeds into the whole psychology of inflation and people freaking out because they think things are too expensive and what that does to their spending patterns.
You know, I think the piece of this, Joel, that we probably want to focus on in addition to just the inflation number itself is what the impact has been on consumer sentiment. And that's, I think, kind of critical to kind of our longer-term view for what economic growth looks like. We know consumer spending is about 70% of gross domestic product. And so, you know, an important reading this week on consumer sentiment numbers.
Yeah, it was a preliminary report from the University of Michigan. Then it gets updated at the end of the month. But it's showing there again that expectations from consumers are starting to come back up after historic lows in June and July. So that's good news in terms of whether that translates into spending. One of the big things about that is, two things actually. So 48% of the consumers interviewed said that inflation is eroding their standard of living. So that doesn't sound very good. But the other thing is that their expectations of where inflation is. So inflation is a moving target, right? So more consumers are picking a lower number for where they expect inflation to be a year from now and 5 years from now. And that actually was validated by another survey that's done by the Federal Reserve Bank out of New York.
You know, I think broadly speaking, continued signs of improvement on the inflation front, broadly speaking, continued signs that the economy is at a minimum muddling along and, you know, showing some signs of strength, especially in some very important areas like employment. And so I think encouraging to me as we put the cap on another of, you know, kind of our 4 week straight run for stocks here, you know, as I think we mentioned today, it doesn't mean that next week's going to be great, but I think some signs that things are getting better, if nothing else. So appreciate you all listening to the program. We enjoy doing it, and we will talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.